My name is Joe Witte. I'm an entrepreneur, veteran, father, and proud team member at Tag One. Thank you for joining our podcast, Getting Transparent, where we get to hear the stories with people who are making a difference in our food and natural product supply chain, find out what drives them, and how they're making this world just a little bit better. This is Getting Transparent, brought to you by Tag One. Great to see you, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. It's good to see you again, Joe.
Cool. So just for our audience, last week we had a really exciting conversation with James Brobin, Marine Corps officer, Purple Heart recipient, who's leading a cannabis and CBD company. And one of the key reasons that he got into the industry is to help address some of the mental health issues that you know, both he dealt with and that a lot of his comrades dealt with, and how CBD and cannabis can help solve some of those. And James is an amazing entrepreneur and business leader. And this week, I'm honored to have Michael Mowdy join me. Michael's a former NFL linebacker, played for the Vikings and the Saints, was the captain for the Saints special teams. He's also one of the co-founders and headed up business development for Seed to System. So, Michael, it's great to have you.
Thanks for having me on, Joe. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, quick question for you. So, how old were you when you started playing football? And what was it like to have a dad who played at Penn State in the NFL to be kind of lingering over you as you're playing from a young man to, you know, to an older guy as well?
Well, I started playing. My dad wouldn't let me play until I was 13, until I was down here is junior high, so seventh grade. Mm-hmm. But he didn't want us to just do one thing. I was playing baseball before that, and got a little burnt out running around travel leagues and year round down here. But no, he was, you know, my dad was definitely always, once I got into football, that's of course what I aspired to do, was to play in the NFL and follow those footsteps. Just because that's the pinnacle of football, but he wasn't that kind of dad in the sense of, he wasn't necessarily coaching me up. He wasn't in any coach's ears. He was kind of a passive. He was more just taught me about the intangibles and the way that you go about the mentality towards the game. You know, being able to flip the switch and all those things that you get the mental aspect of the coaching factor. But he was never that kind of hands-on, as far as you got to put feet here or there. It was just all more kind of just the mental aspect, but it was an incredible resource just for me. It's just to have him as a mentor along the whole way, at every step in the process. Whether it's college, high school to college to the professional level, but how to approach the game from a mental standpoint.
That's really invaluable. To me, that one, you didn't start playing till 13, right? So American sports today is so focused on, got to start your kid at 6, and you got to get special coaches at 7 and 8, and they're grinding. And I just see it's such a burnout process for the kids. It's a burnout process for the parents. And I watched a 30 for 30 special on Norway, and they asked the guy who headed up their Olympic program, because they just went and dominated Winter Olympics. They're like, what do you guys do? They're like, we look at everything they do in America and we do the opposite. And they want to make it fun. They want to make it engaging. And they say they don't really start getting intense until they're about 15 or 16. So the fact that you played at the highest level of your sport and didn't start till you're 13, and your dad focused only on the mental aspect, is really interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, you see so many kids that just get burnt out. They get so much pressure put on them by everybody except for them, And at the end of the day, that's just where, you just get off track. If you don't love doing what you're doing, it's too hard. It's too much work. If you don't love it, if you don't want to do it and make that decision, and it really is, my dad was great about that part of it. And I really didn't even develop physically until I was 15, 16, to where, I think, but when I first got into football, I hated it because I was the smallest kid out there. So I got the crap kicked out of me, but I didn't want to play because I just kept getting knocked around. But that's the part of, really the work ethic and the way you mm-hmm. approach, just they're getting better each day, and then pushing yourself beyond what you think you're capable of, as far as from a training standpoint. That was all the things that, he was really teach me.
I mean, it's a game of collisions, and I love the game of football. I mean, I love watching it on Saturdays and Sundays. I still play flag football for an almost 50-year-old guy and like to get into plays and everything, but I'm 150 pounds, right? So it was never going to be beyond fun for me. But one of the things I love about the sport of football in addition to having physical components, you hit upon it, is certainly the mental aspect and the leadership aspect. And when I was, you could probably tell me 10, 12, 15 years ago, I remember sitting at home when the Jerry Sandusky story broke, and it was absolutely heart-wrenching. As an alumni, I can't remember really how long it's been until something rattled me to some degree, just to see some of the stories about Joe Paterno, who is certainly revered as a leader and a leader of consistency, and what that meant to my alma mater. And what I kind of didn't realize till I was kind of doing some background reading on you is that you were there for that process. And we're in the middle of it. I can't imagine what that was like to be a 20 some odd year old young man, to have that swirling in the middle of the tornado. And what fascinated me is not only were you in the middle of it, but you actually took a leadership role in that process to say, hey, we're going to still commit to the program. We're going to commit to the university, and to rally a lot of your teammates. Talk a little bit about that leadership component, what that situation was like, and maybe where some of those leadership skills came from.
Yeah, that was that was the craziest. I say crazy. I mean, that was the most stressful time, unprecedented time of my life, but also in an entire school's history and that football program's history. Yep. And it wasn't like we had anything to do with the events that took place. It was just the fact that the whole fallout was happening while I was a captain on the football team. And I just realized it was, football became really a vehicle or a mechanism that could help bring the community together, to help mm-hmm. heal from what had happened. And you just realize there was so much, there are so many agendas getting flowed around, and none of the, I just happened to be there whereas, hey, nobody that is here right now had anything to do with the things that had happened. So right. We're going to just rally up together and then keep this thing rolling, just based on the fact that there were just so many people, including my dad, included in his generation, and mm-hmm. that had helped build the program. And we felt like it was our duty, as senior leaders to keep it together. And we had some great coaches and players that believed in that and helped us keep it together. But we were definitely in some aspects we shouldn't have pulled it off, but we did.
It was amazing. I mean, honestly, I have so much respect for Bill O'Brien, who's, unfortunately just fired midway through the season, down at, but that's the NFL, not for long. Right.
That's a business.
It is a business, as you know. But in order to have winning records year after year, in order to keep a large majority of the players not from jumping because the NCAA gave them an opportunity to go someplace else, if you want to go someplace else. And I saw your comments on that you were not happy with the way that process took place. But it seemed like you played a pivotal role in keeping the players there, right? Because now they wouldn't be able to go to a bowl game, achieve a national championship. That opportunity was gone. Was that a difficult process, or once you felt like you had a core team members and said, hey, let's rally around each other, that people started to climb on board, which I imagine if people had taken a different path, it could have completely gone the other way and could have been 0-10 for several years. But some people predicted, oh, Penn State's going to lose every game for the next 3 years. And that wasn't the case at all.
Yeah, that would have been the case. And that's kind of what helped us, at least helped me rally, to get juiced up about it, is because here we are. We had a great team. There was 23 NFL players, on that roster that was in 2012 at Penn State. Some of them were younger. Some of them are, different various classes. But that's how much talent we had on the team. So all of a sudden, us to just not play or not be good, we just took that personally. And from a leadership standpoint, I just always believed in being honest with the guys and having that kind of respect for them and being able to, I wasn't asking anybody to do anything I wasn't willing to do.
Yep.
And our senior class, really, we had just so much leadership on that team, not just myself, and of course we had leaders like Bill O'Brien, Craig Fitzgerald, our strength coach, but a lot of guys, Coach Larry Johnson, the D-line coach, mm-hmm. and the list goes on, but really, that's where I learned a lot about really leadership, and I was getting emails and support from around the world, from Penn State, the network and the alumni base. And it's just something that you believe in. It's lot of people, especially today's, you know, culture of just instant judgment and trial by fire and Twitter, trial by Twitter. It's like, you know, here's just a group of guys just trying to hold the thing together, and it had nothing to do with, of course, it was terrible what had happened and what took place.
Absolutely.
But yep. we were just trying to make the best out of that situation. And but yeah, we went from on a Monday, got sanctioned. On Tuesday, we had a list of 40 some guys that were out of there, gone, that we kind of just had to one by one re-recruit and our own teammates, our friends, and shoot by Wednesday, Thursday, towards the end of that week, that bought us a little time to keep everybody together. But it was definitely a chronic stress environment, that's for sure.
I think you hit on a couple things. One, which is, you know, hey, when things get difficult, it's you know, an option is to quit, right? Or go someplace else. I'd have to think that because you guys pulled together through a really difficult time, that developed a special bond with you and your teammates that will probably carry a lot deeper than most teams, which are already pretty tight. It's a lifelong lesson for sure.
To have the opportunity to show that level of commitment and leadership and which is just is rare just to begin with. Now more so, where you know guys can leave and come and go. But that kind of loyalty, you just don't get those opportunities to prove it on such a national scale in front of the media. And we had private jets waiting for me, other players at the airport, and here the building's on fire, and you know we're going back in the building.
Wow,
that's kind of how the analogy I use. But that's we just had to freaking, you know, we created our own little bubble where we just ignored everything going on outside, and yeah, those kind of bonds, they are for life. Yeah, absolutely.
That's incredible. So you've been playing football, you know, I guess 10-15 years. And ultimately, it took a toll on your body. Talk a little bit about, you know, the surgeries you had, the injuries you had, and just kind of, you know, how you got through that. And it wasn't necessarily just the injuries you had to deal with, but also the remedies that were given you and how that started to impact your digestive system.
Yeah, I mean, look, you put on a helmet and you run into people as fast as you can for years and years. And full speed collisions, it's going to take a toll on your body. That's just the nature of it. Especially I was in a position where that's what I did, just go tackle the man with the ball. And, so, you know, when it came to, I had three ACL reconstructions in college. You know, you play football long enough, the injury rate is 100%, you know, it's not like you're not going to get hurt. So, so there's always the factor of, as the early years, it was, you know, the doctor just throws you a bag of ibuprofen 800s and, you know, you don't know anything. You're just eating because it feels good and you're not sure what it's doing. And the understanding of what, you know, what Celebrex, all these anti-inflammatories, you're just cranking. And then it's just that over time started to affect my digestive system. And so I had to look for more natural ways to just fight the aches and pains, just to be comfortable and continue doing what I was doing on the field. So, eight or nine surgeries, orthopedically to fix me up, you know, screw in the foot, couple of knee reconstructions, you know, shoulder, you know, fingers, those kind of things. I start adding up. And then, you know, once I got into the NFL, that's when I started dealing with the ulcerative colitis from a gastro perspective. And then just learning, that was a whole new challenge for me. Cause by that period of time, two, three years in the NFL, I got my own team of people that put me back together, chiropractor, massage therapy, orthopedic. I got a list of people, that got my own team kind of, from an internal perspective. I had to build a new team of doctors that I trusted, was integrated functional medicine, you know, biologists, nutritionists, and just find people that, were helping me do something that no one had ever done, which was, you know, get my entire colon removed and then come back to play football in the next season. So that was a challenge of proportions I had never dealt with, and just did it.
So in many ways, you had to not just rely on the doctors, the team doctors, the NFL doctors, but you had to go and say, hey, I think there's a better way here to some degree, or something's not right. And you had to almost put together your own team of physicians that had a different approach. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I realize once you sit in a doctor's office, 20 or 30 of them over time, and they're all, you realize, look, at this point, I've done enough research on this stuff. And then you start realizing, hey, there's different schools of thought here.
Yep.
When it comes to treating something, and maybe we don't understand everything that we know about this mm-hmm. Disease and the microbiome, and so complex that and I'm just given this kind of cookie cutter blanket treatment. And so I can pretty much tell in a few minutes with meet with some doctors that hey, thank you for your time, kind of thing. And and so I did a lot of research. There's some of it is still, got to be data proven, and a lot of that stuff has got to, need more evidence for a lot of the treatments to go on a mainstream like Western pharma scale. Mm-hmm. But the pharma was that treatment option for me was really starting to take its toll, and it was jacking me up physically. And I really just was like, I can't be on these pills and everything for the rest of my life. I just wanted to find a natural solution. And so I was just started body hacking, researching Tim Ferriss, Ben Greenfield, all those guys. And then, so I kind of, you meet with integrated functional medicine, you do the blood tests and you do all those food allergies, and you go to some sit in the doctor's office at a hospital, and they're telling you, what you eat is not going to matter. And then I'm like, okay, so there's gotta be some kind of middle ground here. So that's kind of where it started for me. And then that's when I started taking CBD, and I really felt like when I was taking gel caps and started doing my own, data and tracking it. And, I realized, hey, it's helping me for this. And I wasn't even taking it for this, but it's helping with that too. I realized. Mm-hmm. So I started just doing self data collection. And then after surgery, my first surgery, which I got, split open my abdomen, within, I go from morphine drip in the hospital to 6 days I'm out, and I'm like, let me just see if this CBD stuff works on pain and just start testing it. And the first day I woke up, took some gel caps, and then it was like 7 p.m. that evening, and I realized I hadn't needed a painkiller.
Wow.
And I'm like, well, okay, this is starting to definitely work on my pain threshold in some form or fashion. Let me explore this some more. And that kind of trial for me went on for like a few years, and I tested different products, different delivery methods. And then that really was where it started. That was two or three years of that.
And that's absolutely fascinating. And kind of shows your mindset, which is kind of a methodical, meticulous, you're taking notes. I mean, you were your case study, right? And I think you're not talking about like I take it, but it's more kind of sleep and just mellow out, some minor pain management, but nothing significant. But you're talking about like high pain management. So like, you're going to notice a difference, right? You just get out of surgery and you have like, 9 different surgeries that you've had throughout your body, you're going to have some aches and pains. You're going to know if you're feeling a 7 or a 3. How are you introduced to CBD? Is it something you just discovered? And then, all right, you're like, I think we have something here. And then how did you find the brands and products that you can trust? Because there's a lot of garbage CBD out there.
Yeah, that's really what that's what I realized, is that there were so many products out there, and I found the same because I was always taking supplements, and I was always reading on the back of the labels, and I had a pretty good understanding of what ingredients did what in terms of building muscle, cut either fat or those kind of things, amino acids, proteins. I was living in the animal kingdom in terms of those kind of supplements. So my filter, as far as what makes a good product, the labeling, the package and all that, I had a pretty good gauge. And so I took that approach to, CBD products, and I had a pretty good idea of, the top upper echelon of brands. And then I got into the extraction research and realized, oh, there's different, there's reasons why some is better than others. Mm-hmm. And it's not because of what the label says, it's because of how they take the oil off the plant and that process. And so I just started, like you said, just a methodical approach to, okay, what goes into making the product that's better. And I had a friend of mine, a teammate of mine who had a plug. So I got a deal. I was getting a half off deal on this other brand. Mm-hmm. And that worked for me. I settled with that and it was good enough. And I remember, they had like the 75 milligram gel capsules and I would take two or three of them. And that's kind of what I thought the range was. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I met, Shane, our CEO, this was about last July, so more than a year ago, he gave my dad a bottle of our gold tincture. The started talking about vapor distillation and all this, and I'm like, okay, that sounds interesting. Let me put it to the test and I'll find out. And from the first time I put a dropper, the taste of it, the flavor of it, it was different and unlike right. anything I had tasted. And then I sat on the couch and I just waited and just put my antennas up, just kind of seeing how it felt. And next thing you know, I'm like, okay, this is the best stuff I've taken. Mm. And it was pretty immediate. It was actually that immediate. And then I didn't call Shane or anything. I've waited like a week and I tested it for a week and mm. it ended up being like, 7 or 8 days. And I'm like, okay, no doubt in my mind. What I got to find out what makes this as good as it is, because nothing has this kind of potency. And I wasn't taking that much of it. That's the other thing. So I knew there was something special about it. And so, I think within 2 weeks of that, I was on a plane and I was going to Colorado because I had to mm-hmm. find out more. And then that's when I realized that, well, this is vapor distillation. This is proprietary from an engineer at MIT, and this is how they do it. And then that's what I was like, well, I want to get behind this because yep. this stuff is real and it's not only helping me, but I know that how many people could benefit from this. And if they just realize that how much crap is out there on the market and yep. how much, not knowing, here's something I could get behind, I could trust. If I can trust it, we got something, because my filter was pretty tough at that point.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about like what's happening in the CBD market today, and there's a handful of good companies who are doing it the right way. I mean, there've even been some big brands who have gone under because they weren't doing it the right way recently. But they're good at telling their story and raising money, but there are some good quality companies. We've had the fortune to work with them who are, working on, they're GMP certified. How are you guys managing? I don't know. Do you guys run into a lot of skepticism when you're pitching your brand, or people are asking you questions about manufacturing? I know that you've always talked about wanting to, like, hey, not surprising the way you ran your business when you're on the football field and kind of post football and taking notes about doing things the right way, having transparency and making sure that you guys continue to have a great product.
Yeah, that's also, as I was reading and learning more and went out and visited, saw the farms and the whole facilities, the operations at Seeded System, I realized, okay, this isn't just a product label brand. This is Seed Genetics with our partners at High Grade Hemp Seed. This is our farms. This is our proprietary vapor process. And this is our product manufacturer, CGMP. So we had this entire supply chain vertical with co-ownership that, hey, maybe we got something. We could really tell the story of hey, within 20 miles, we got from genetics all the way to the bottles. And that's a differentiator. I'm not saying that we're the only company or companies that have that sort of model, but it's a rare thing. And that's, you can see that now in the industry where the supply chains are just, you see these fly-by-night companies and, you're buying this oil from a company that, Corpse Oil or whatever. And it's just, you get this oversupply, and it's such a variable market and every facet of the supply chain that it's being able to stay diverse and have really just, it comes down to partnerships. Our partnerships help us with insulated from a lot of that volatility.
Oh yeah. We talked to a young woman here in New Jersey who wants to start getting into, you know, sourcing their own product. She visited a farm up in Vermont and said there was like just gross, you know, like where they're hanging their flour, their biomass, just bugs everywhere, spider webs everywhere. She's like, yeah, I don't think it's supposed to be like this. This could be a problem and we're not going to work together anymore. So, I mean, it's just so important to get your eyes on the your partners and facilities that are doing the work for you. So now you're in business and you're an entrepreneur. Talk a little bit about that process and what it's like getting into entrepreneurship. What are some challenges that you're facing that you didn't expect? Tell me what that world's looking like for you.
Well, that's I really just shoot. I left football. Coming on 2 years now. So I wanted to take a year and just take a gap year, figure out set my compass, figure out what the next 20 years is going to look like, and do something that I was as passionate about, but something different. I always felt like I could had more to offer than just football. And so I had looked at some coaching opportunities, some broadcasting opportunities. And I just, when I learned about CG System and the whole process, the industry, I just found myself, I couldn't stop reading about it. I couldn't stop studying it. And that's when I'm like, okay, well, let's make this my job because I'm just that passionate about it. I believe in it. And so I came into it barely learning, knowing how to email. I came from just, text or call. And here I got to get up to speed quick. It's not like I had a team or agent or anybody. Everything was, if I don't know how to do it, learn how to do it. Do the tutorials. And so I started from zero, not zero, but pretty much just had to just humble myself to the point where, okay, let's start from one. And because I'm 8 years behind of the workforce here, I have been doing something that really, I started to take the transferable skill sets, and as I took the time to identify them over the last year or two, and say, all right, what is my value to any organization? What are my best skill sets? And then, all right, let's transfer them to this in this industry where, the leadership, those kind of things, the relationship building, the networking, all those things, where I know I can bring a lot of value and help just legitimize it, but. From an entrepreneurial standpoint, yeah, the learning curve was pretty steep, but that's just the way it is. And so I don't dip my toe in the water when it comes to doing anything that I'm passionate about. So, whatever it takes, that's been my mentality.
Well, I think it's apparent that you have the soft skills, right? Which are the most important thing. If you're willing to work hard, self-educate, humble yourself, surround yourself with smart people, dive in and not afraid to make mistakes, you'll get there eventually. Maybe not the way we intend to. Maybe things don't always go as smooth. You have an idea, but
they never do.
No, man, for sure. I mean, I've been involved in, six or seven early stage businesses, either as a, co-founder or founder in some capacity. And none of them like hit it big per se, right? Like, I'm still working for a living, but every time I've just learned something valuable. And to me, that's the journey. That's the that's the growth. I can put food on the plate and have a roof over our head and working at a great organization now. But that's just, I've just learned to enjoy the process and get better as a business leader and entrepreneur is what it's all about for sure.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I learned to stop getting I would get frustrated myself. I'm like, I feel like a Neanderthal just banging a computer because I can't figure out this IT thing or some sort of, it's a PDF, I need a JPEG or I just had to learn to trust the process and just enjoy. Look, if I'm better than I was last week this week, then okay, that's all right. I can just, that's my minimum threshold, and then next week will be better. Look, I stopped being so hard on myself because, hey, I'm just getting going. And, and then you see the progress, football was more instant gratification. We studied hard for seven days and we play on Sunday and it's now, and everything's like the ups and the downs are so, the time scale is just compressed. Yep. Whereas, business, my time expectation for how things develop and, the gratification you get is just a stretched out time frame. So that in general for me, just had to understand the process and then go through the process and trust the process. That's, that's, if you love the process, you'll then the rest will just take care of itself.
I like to say slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And the, you know, the beautiful thing today is if you're willing to hop on Google or YouTube for basic things, like it's going to show it to you all the time. So, hey man, 6 weeks ago, I was like, all right, let's do a podcast. I'm like, what do I do? How do I make a podcast? Like you start Googling and here we are now. So you just figure it out, you know, and you call people. Yeah, absolutely. I called a buddy of mine who does podcast consulting and he's like, yeah, man, you're pretty much on track and here's some tips for you. Here's what I do. And we're rocking and rolling. So that's awesome. So what are some other things you're working on? I know you're on the board at a nonprofit. Talk a little bit about that and how you ended up there and anything else that's keeping you busy these days.
Yeah, well, we got a lot keeping us busy. I'm kind of doing the same. You know, I'm launching my own website. I'm learning social media and you know, SEO and doing all this. Everything's got to go digital. You know, I don't want to get left in the dark and not understand all the technical integration that's going on, especially at such an accelerated rate with the COVID. I just think it's, you know, this year has really accelerated that integration. And we're working here with the e-marketing agency that we're sharing space with, and so that I'm learning all those things. But we just moved. We're updating our cancer fund, which my dad started 40 years ago, to raise money with the mission of prevention, service, early detection, education.
Great. And so,
we're raising money for that, and without a doubt. That's kind of, I always knew I wanted to be a part of that mission. And so we started, as I'm doing all my research on these cannabinoids and I'm reading studies from Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and I'm about cancer and I'm bringing back to my dad. I'm like, hey, we gotta, you know, get on top of this and share this resource with the people here. This is Louisiana, this is deep South, you know, it's not always, the best place to access a lot of those resources. So we started making products specifically for chemo patients and got my dad's blessing on that too, to where now with Seed System, we have products where all the profits and proceeds of the sales go to go to research or go to providing chemo patients with, you know, we give them oil, we give them.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And, you know, a lot of that is, the regulatory aspects are still playing out, but you know, the bottom line is that there's proof, there's data to prove that this stuff is helping, and it's just not here and done in the U.S. at this standpoint. But I mean, 1,000 patient cohort studies, that sort of data is there, it's out there. It's just, you know, I think bringing that awareness to it and then being a part of that evolution in the next wave of treatment for cancer and cannabinoids and how those things relate. And I, you know, the Cancer Fund, we want to be a part of that movement. And you know, we tied up all the other cancer nonprofits in the state and to form one group to really leverage our influence here. And we just recently got a bill passed in Baton Rouge a few months back to help with funding experimental treatments for patients that they're candidates for. And that's all done in conjunction with the medical system and the insurance companies here in the state. So that was a big thing we're really proud of, and we're looking to do some more things with that.
That's amazing. What I love about what you're doing is it's not the break fix model, right? Like, hey, something's broken, let's put a Band-Aid on it. It's getting to root cause analysis. Like, why is cancer continuing to grow? And I have to think it's part of what we're putting in and on our bodies, right? So, I mean, sugar, the use of sugars and corn syrups has exploded, which is inflammatory and just creates a nice environment for that. You know, the fatty foods and not the right kind of fatty foods that we're eating is not the right type of thing. What's the impact of pesticides and bad soils that we're growing our vegetation on? Those things, all those components, you start to add those, I just have to believe are having a big impact. And I love that you guys are saying, hey, like, how do we prevent these at a macro level and then use, you know, certain natural remedies to help solve some of that is a big impact. But what's the name of the nonprofit and how can people learn more?
Yes. It's themaudicancerfund.org. That's our website. We just revamped the whole website, and we're going to be building that out. But yeah, that's the main thing, is just to give patients resources, access to something that helps now, as opposed to, hey, we're not just raising money for research that you won't see or feel for 10 years. By the time it gets through the research pipeline, this is something that, hey, it's safe, it's effective. And, we're not saying it cures anything. We're not saying that it doesn't treat, prevent any kind of but these things take the edge off and they help. Even if it's this much, that's enough to work. Okay. And at some point we'll be able to show the testimonials and the feedback that we've gotten from people and I get calls once a week where, people are in tears, just telling me how much that it has helped them, with nerve pain or just all the side effects that go along with what the damage that those, treatments, do to the rest of your body, not just the actual cancer cells. Mm. So it's a lot of things that make you feel good while you're doing it and helping people. And that's what it's all about. So that's an exciting project we're working on and continuing to grow.
Yep. I mean, having those things we're passionate about, like you said, and helping other people can certainly drive us for sure. So we're going to move into the next phase, something I call the transparent 10, Michael. And these are where I'm going to fire off 10 questions at you, and you just hit me with the things that first pop in your mind, all right?
Yes, love it.
All right, cool. So what's your most proudest achievement?
Proudest achievement? Well, I guess about 5 years in the NFL. But coming back, when I actually was voted by my teammates to win, nominated for the Ed Block Courage Award, which is basically voted by the player that is, you felt like had overcome the most adversity in the offseason. And I had an entire large intestine colon removed, starting in November, 3 stages of surgeries. And I was back on the field in August.
I don't know if that's amazing or a little crazy, but I think a little bit of both.
It's absolutely crazy. Awesome. It's a little bit of both. You're right. That was one of my proudest moments. That was my last comeback. I made a deal.
I love it. So what's a failure that you've learned from?
I think trusting people in business too soon, probably. Yep. I come from an environment where the locker room is you don't have to look over your shoulder. You know that person you're with has got your back, has trust you, with everything. Mm-hmm. I'm if anything, I'm a little too trusting too soon. If we're on the same page, I'm a team guy. I'm ultimate team. Let's go. I don't have to worry about, but some of those things, there's a balance where you kind of trust but verify, and that's probably the biggest lesson I've learned.
You said a trust but verify, a good contract and a good attorney at your back will help a little bit, but not always for sure. So what's something you love to do?
I love to play the piano. I love to play the piano.
That's cool. What's something you hate to do?
I hate doing my taxes. I hate doing numbers. It's not a numbers guy.
Guilty pleasure.
Guilty pleasure. Dirty martinis, let's call it that.
I like it. Favorite band?
I have a few, but it depends on it. I'm a big music guy. Favorite band? I guess I'm going to go with my all-time AC/DC.
All right. Favorite movie?
Interstellar.
All right. Favorite vacation?
Buenos Aires.
Something you suck at in business?
There's plenty. There's plenty right now, but probably email. Staying on top of emails, writing letters to people.
Something you're great at in business?
Networking, people, relationships.
Not surprising. Michael, man, it's been awesome. I'm glad we were able to take some time to sit down and learn a little bit about your story. And how you just have, and in many ways, I'm excited to see it just beginning. I think some people struggle, and we've talked about before the struggles of transition, whether you're in the military or you're in the NFL, to go from one phase to the next. But I'm excited to see you just diving in head first, building something great and seeing where it's going and figuring things out. So I appreciate you joining me today. What are some websites where people can learn more about Seed to System and your nonprofit?
Well, seedsystem.com, that's our company website. They have a little bit about our partnership, and we did a roll-on product, a topical, and then we're coming out with a 50 milligram vapor capsule, which is a product that we're developing proprietary. And then the Mahdi, it's just MahdiCancerFund.org. You can find out about both of those.
And that's M-A-U-T-I for those people who don't know. So, all right, cool. We'll get that posted too.
Awesome. No, Michael, it's just been great. This is an example of a relationship right here, Joe, when we first met, and, you know, both Penn Staters, and, you know, I'm just glad to be continuing this relationship. And then I thank you again for having me on, man. This is great.
My pleasure. Talk soon.
All right, Joe. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Getting Transparent, brought to you by Tag One. Please subscribe to receive notifications for future episodes and visit us at www.tagone.com.